Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and it's our privilege to be joined by
Victoria Gal, Associate Conductor and Director of Education for the National Philharmonic.
And we are here today talking the National Philharmonic's presentation of the iconic Porgy and Bess. Thanks so much for joining us, Victoria.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jason.
How'd this come about? Is this a touring production, or is this something that National Philharmonic is just setting up like a one-off? You gotta be there and you gotta see it, or you're gonna miss it.
That's pretty much. We have the one performance on Saturday evening, the 24th, and if you're not there, then it's all over.
So before we dive too far into everything else, why don't you remind our listeners, maybe if we have some younger listeners, give them a little breakdown of the plot and the premise.
Porgy and Bess is probably considered to be the greatest American folk opera, and it takes place in the 1930s in in what's known as the Gullah community off the coast of South Carolina, and it's a story. It's a love story. The story of Porgy, who is disabled, a poor man, and his love for and attempts to redeem Bess from many problems that she's had in her life, and including drugs and getting caught up with the wrong man. And the love between the two of them, it's got drama, it's got comedy, it's got wonderful music with influences by jazz and opera, the whole nine yards.
Fantastic. This thing was way ahead of its time in terms of social commentary and race relations.
Right. Well, you know, it is truly an opera that was ahead of its time because I think both Dubois Heyward, who wrote the original novel, grew up in that area, and he was so inspired and fascinated by this African-American culture on the Barrier Islands off of South Carolina, and really, I thought, wanted to bring that out in his book and the subsequent play that he wrote with it. Gershwin was really taken with it, and when he wrote the opera, actually his brother Ira, who wrote the lyrics, and the Gershwin estate insist that the lead roles can only be performed by black singers when it's performed in the United States.
He wrote that stipulation into the performance. It has to be
right.
African-American cast.
That's right.
And explain why that was, just in terms of the time period. Other plays were putting, you know, white actors in blackface. So explain why that was so groundbreaking.
I think that there's a real feeling that there was a sense of authenticity that would be lost by having the term cultural appropriation didn't exist earlier in the 20th century, but by having white singers try to put on these characters and the difficulty of finding sort of a real depth and truth behind the characters. Now, this, by the way, it wasn't the case in Europe. I don't believe he insisted on this in European productions for it, probably for a more practical matter that simply the performers were not available to them.
Right. But again, here at Strathmore, it will be an all African American cast. And
that's absolutely right.
Explain. Could you tell our listeners who's actually going to be performing in the cast?
Sure. Our Porgy is a National Philharmonic favorite, Kevin Dace, who appears frequently with us in everything from Handel to Bach, Beethoven, and many times our audiences are familiar with him. We last actually did Porgy and Bess in 2008, and Kevin was our Porgy there. And he's done this role all around the world, you know, New York Philharmonic, National Symphony, St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, and on and on.
Well, 2008 would have been an interesting year to do this, for sure.
That's true.
If you think about it, yeah.
Very interesting year.
Yeah.
Bess is Marlissa Hudson, who I believe comes from this area and is just a wonderful, wonderful singer. We're looking forward very much to having with her. She last appeared with us last spring in a Carmina Burana.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some of the other, those are of course the two title characters, but the character of Crown, Crown is the bad guy. He's the really sort of overbearing, intimidating, scary, you know, character. Michael Redding has done that character once again, and also as well as Porgy and other characters in the show, all over with, you know, Atlanta Opera, in New York, toured Europe with it. Likewise, Chauncey Parker, who's playing Sport and Life, toured all over the world with the character. Andy Moore, who's playing Serena, has done the character with Atlanta and Virginia Operas. Our Jake Edward Pleasant actually did it with us, did the character with us last time we did it, and has done his role with New York City Opera. So we have a great cast who have their life with these roles extends way beyond the confines of Strathmore.
Awesome. And so, in addition to the cast, in terms of musicians, can you describe what we're going to see on stage?
Sure. We have the wonderful National Philharmonic, which is just a fantastic orchestra. We'll be right there on the stage. That's a neat thing about semi-staged or concert opera, right?
Right.
So you have the leads, the singers in front of the orchestra, but you do get to see the orchestra right there on stage. We have the National Philharmonic Chorale, which joined by members of the Duke Ellington School of the Arts in D.C. from their chorus. So we're excited about them. And so we'll have that huge chorus up in the choral tiers because there's fantastic choral numbers. We also have Michael Bobbitt coming on as stage director because there will be a little bit of, you know, we do some sort of very, very basic staging around, and Michael Bobbitt is well known in the area. I think that there probably is hardly a theater in town where he hasn't worked, you know, Arena, Ford, Signature, on and on and on and on. And has received many Helen Hayes Awards nominations, and we're very excited to have him joining us.
That's great. Let's go into some of the musical numbers by the Gershwins. I mean, I could list them: "Summertime" and what was it? "It Ain't Necessarily
It Ain't
So."
Necessarily
they countered the Nazis in a staging. Actually, you know, instead of me listing them, I won't be able to use that soundbite. So why don't you list them for us?
Well, some of the most well loved numbers from this opera. First of all, the most often heard is "Summertime." It has been performed by many, many artists over time. Comes from this opera. "It Ain't Necessarily So." "I Got Plenty of Nuttin'." Those are probably those three are the ones that are the most well loved. There's some other wonderful, wonderful arias that you hear less, particularly "My Man's Gone Now," mm-hmm. Which is very, very, very just moving and soulful. There's also, like I mentioned before, some great choral numbers. "I Just Can't Sit Down," when you've got the whole company getting ready to go off to a picnic and that sort of excitement coming up. And you have a wonderful number at the end of Act One that's Bess in the chorus talking about getting ready for the judgment day and everything, and it's just
right.
Compelling. It's really compelling music.
I'm wondering, when you just said that, getting ready for the judgment day, I'm wondering, is that why August Wilson wove that into Fences? You know, that there's the character that keeps saying, "Get ready for the judgment day." I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
I never made that connection, but it's possible.
Very, very possible. Very possible.
Interesting.
I'd have to look at the timing of the two.
Yeah, right. But speaking of films, all of us movie buffs will remember the 1959 version with Sidney Poitier and Dorothy Dandridge, directed
right.
by Otto Preminger, who did Laura and Anatomy of Murder. So many great stuff. I'm a movie guy, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
Do you remind our listeners of how, I mean, this came out in 1959, of how, you know, if we thought the play and the opera were groundbreaking, so was this movie. I mean, this is pre Mockingbird and all that stuff. I mean, this is that helped bring it to the masses, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm thinking about that movie. I'm trying to remember, was that a movie of the opera, or was that a movie of the Dubose play, the 1927 play? Because I know they later made that into a movie. And that's I'm not completely sure.
I think the Poitier one was based on the opera.
Mm-hmm.
Either
mm-hmm.
way, it got the story out.
Right, exactly. And it's kind of interesting because after that, there was actually a big sort of gap when this piece wasn't performed so much in the 1960s and into the 1970s.
Why do you think?
Well, because there was a real question about whether or not it had racist overtones.
Right.
There was real discomfort with the idea of a white man writing a play and then a white man writing an opera based on the play about African Americans and whether or not it was portraying African Americans well. And so there was real discomfort with that throughout the civil rights era in the 60s and the 70s. And I think it wasn't until the Houston Grand Opera production in 1976 when they brought back the full original score, which had been cut down over the years, and it presented it as a true American work, so that people had an understanding that it was part of American history and American culture and the progress of American music, and it fully got embraced. You know, then soon after that, it was revived on Broadway, and the Met finally did it in 1985, and it's just, you know, gone since then.
Right, right. Now it's sort of back in.
Because during that period, I don't think it really ever lost its popularity in Europe so much, but it did have to go through a sort of that process of people thinking about it and becoming comfortable with what it is that makes it great as a work in the United States.
Well, that's what's great about this or any artwork, you know. We're constantly reexamining it through
the
context and the current lens, and so it's nice to see its kind of its journey and now how it's back sort of in the cultural bloodstream.
Exactly.
Right? Sort of in closing, you've been really generous with your time, but just sort of in closing, remind our listeners how the original Porgy was from right here in D.C.
The original Porgy was Todd Duncan, who was a professor at Howard University.
There you go.
And he actually originally had no interest in doing it because he thought that the music of Gershwin was a little bit below him, and Gershwin had no original interest in him because he said, "I don't want a professor singing this music."
They both thought that they were too good for the other.
They both thought that they were too good for each other, and I think they both fell in love with each other.
Right.
And Todd Duncan, well known for originating that role.
That's so great. And I believe we might be trying to catch up with his grandson here in a
that
minute.
That would be fantastic. I know that there are so many people in this area who knew and loved him and studied with him, and he had a huge, huge impact in the D.C. area.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to be great, and hopefully you guys will have a huge impact on the D.C. area.
We hope so.
At Strathmore on February 24th, one night only on that Saturday, so get your tickets now. Thanks so much for joining us, Victoria. You've been great.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.